Well, the Dead Sea Scroll finds belong to what I would call the old days. The sons of light against the sons of darkness, and we're the ones that are going to be the glorious ones. That's tied to the historical concept, and the symbols are being read historically. We are the sons of light, and they are the sons of darkness. Whereas in the Nag Hammadi finds, those Coptic papers that were found in 1948, you know, in the Egyptian desert, and that are all been translated now, in the Gospel of Thomas, for example, in contrast to, let's say, the Dead Sea Scrolls, what you get there is the all-brotherhood thing. You really do. This is a Gnostic tradition. And that wonderful last saying in the Thomas Gospel, when the disciples ask Jesus, when will the kingdom come? Now, the Orthodox tradition is the kingdom is going to come historically. The answer there is the kingdom comes psychologically. The answer that is given is the kingdom will not come by expectation. The kingdom of the Father is spread upon the earth, and men do not see it. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a change of point of view. It's a change of perspective. It's a change of what you see. You can look at the other person as an it, or you can look at him as your brother or sister, and the whole world changes.
So do you think that these texts will... I'm just trying to relate again to how so many of this kind of thing gets kind of shunted off into academia or onto the shelf. Do you think it will come into, let's say, Catholicism or Christianity as a structure?
Well, the first reactions have been negative. The pulpit doesn't want this message. It wants it that we have it. There was a fascinating moment in New York City when the Dalai Lama arrived, and the first welcome was at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And there they were. There were the Catholic clergy, there were the Eastern Orthodox clergy, there were rabbis, there were Protestant ministers and so forth. And the whole sense of Buddhism is all the traditions intend the same end, you know, and our ways to it. And the Dalai Lama, seeing this here, made this statement. Oh, by the way, the young man who was doing the translating, he was a professor from the University of Virginia named Thompson, I think. He was simply magnificent, picking this up and in accurate Buddhist terminology, rendering these translations. So the Dalai Lama really made this point. Well, Cardinal Cook had to let his member of the group know that that is not so. We have it, you know. And I've seen it sitting around the table, rabbis, Protestant ministers, Catholics, and so forth, putting on this show of accord, but each is holding his cards close, and each has the trump.
So that might be called the ecumenical movement. It's perhaps mythical.
The only way you can go is by yielding the trump. Yes. Well, then a very amusing thing. 2 days later, at St. John's the Divine uptown, there was a meeting for the Dalai Lama of the Buddhist communities in New York, people interested in Buddhism, and there were over 1,000 people in that place. It was a magnificent event. And it was conducted as though we were in the Jokhan Temple in Lhasa in the old days, you know, with the chants and distribution of prasad, buttered tea. Thank God it wasn't yak butter that had been rancid. But it was delicious. And then the Dalai Lama made a statement. He was talking to the Buddhists. He said, keep up your practice. The results do not happen fast. This is not an instant realization. And as you practice, you will become aware of a change of consciousness. Do not become attached to your method. For when your consciousness will have changed, you will recognize that all the methods are intending the one goal. That's the song that mythology sings. It comes from the spirit of the human consciousness.
In 1983, at New Dimensions Radio's 10th anniversary celebration, Joseph Campbell gave a talk in which he went on with his account of the Dalai Lama's remarks and their meaning.
And then the Dalai Lama had something else to say. Now, this actually was a reply to Cardinal Cook, only it was in very low key. And if you hadn't heard what Cardinal Cook had said, you wouldn't know what the meaning was. He said, You are all Buddhists or interested in Buddhism. He said, keep up your practice. The transformation of consciousness does not come quickly. It's not instant transformation. Keep up your practice. And now comes the big word, but do not become attached to your method. When your practice, it begins to yield results and your consciousness is changing, you will realize that all of the methods intend the goal. And what is the goal? What is the realization? The realization was illustrated in Hawaii in a remarkable way. There's a division right across the island of Oahu. It's called the Pali. It's a great range of mountains. And the north wind, which is constantly blowing there, comes through those mountain peaks with a great force. So people like to go up there to get their hair blown around. And people like to go up there to commit suicide. It's like jumping off the bridge out here. You might as well make a big thing of it. And there was a police car with two policemen in it going up the Pali Road. And when they came to one of these jump-off places, there was a young man apparently preparing to jump off. The police car stopped. The policeman on the right got out and grabbed the young man just as he jumped. And the policeman didn't let go. And the policeman was going over when cop number two came around and pulled him back. It was a fantastic moment. And the policeman who had saved the boy was asked, why did you do that? Why didn't you let go? You were going over. He said, I had given myself to that man. If I had let him go, I couldn't have lived another day in my life. He'd forgotten everything, his duty, his family, everything. The whole world of his phenomenal existence disappeared, and this was a one-pointed giving of oneself to something else. Schopenhauer, in a wonderful paper of his called The Foundations of Morality, asked the question, what is it that breaks through when that happens? And his answer is, this is a metaphysical realization. This is the sudden realization that you and that other are one. We are all of the one life, the one consciousness, and not only we, human beings, but we're one with the rabbits and the trees and all of that. And the experience of separateness in space is simply a function of the way our consciousness works. But we have another level of consciousness that knows this other thing. You and the other are one.
In this program, Joseph discusses the divine in religious culture, the mythological role of deities in the universe and within ourselves, the concept embraced by many Native American cultures that all life is divine, the traditional role of the shaman as intermediary between the human and the divine, and the often fine line between divine inspiration and what society views as madness. This conversation took place in February 1981, when Joseph was 77. We began with a question about humankind's relationship to deities. In the Bhagavad Gita, that wonderful document that emerged out of India's past and is so relevant to the present, I want to quote from it. Whatever path men travel is my path. No matter where they walk, it leads to me. Those who sacrifice to the various deities will go to those deities. The ancestor worshippers will go to their ancestors. Those who worship elemental powers and spirits will go to them. So also my devotees will come to me. that quote, Joseph, just brings to mind that all throughout history and all through the ages, human beings have worshipped a god. And all too often, I think, we put God into some kind of a personal box and call one thing pagan and another thing the truth. What about that from a mythological point of view?
Well, from my point of view, which is based on years of study of mythology, there are two aspects to divinities. One, the divine as a personification of the energies that operate in the universe, and the other as a personification of the energies that operate in ourselves. Now, finally, these are the same energies. And so the deity who is thought of as without is also a reference to what is within. And now, in the different ethnic areas, there is a tendency to think of their vocabulary of deities, their pantheon of deities, as being true, and the deities of other people as being false. This is a particularly characteristic attitude of the biblically based religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. When it goes to primitive peoples or to Oriental and archaic religions, that's not the situation usually. There's a tendency to recognize that the deities of this group are equivalent to the deities of that group or of our group. This is particularly conspicuous in the classical world. When Caesar went into Gaul, he wrote in the sixth book of the Gallic Wars about the Celtic religion. But he used the Latin names for the Latin gods to describe the Celtic gods. And when Alexander the Great went into India, his officers recognized in the Indian gods the same gods that they were worshiping. Krishna was identified with Indra, for example. This is known as syncretism, and it seems to be correct. When you confine the truth to your tradition and cut out other people, that gives you a certain privilege in your own mind with respect to them. That is, you have the privilege of knocking them around. But the only way to open up to the contemporary world, where there are no horizons of this kind permissible anymore, is to recognize